Welcome back to another glass of Charlie Faye. I know it has been a minute since I last released a podcast episode, but we are back and better than ever. So grab whatever you're drinking today and let's get started. I've been so excited to record this episode. Today we're talking about vaginas. And there's a lot of stigma around the woman's reproductive system and a lot of things that just aren't talked about enough. So we are talking with Katie and Aaron from Reconnect Health, and they're going to tell us all about vulvas, vaginas, clitorises, anything that you can think of. I'm excited to dive in.
All right, guys. So I am here today with Aaron Matheson and Katie Kelly, co-owners of Reconnect Health and pelvic floor physiotherapists. So I'm going to let them introduce themselves. You guys can go ahead.
Hi, my name is Katie Kelly. And as she just said, I'm a pelvic floor physiotherapist. I've been practicing pelvic floor physio in Moncton for a number of years now. I've been a physio for 10 years and moved to Moncton in 2012. And went out on my own in 2017, and Aaron and I opened up this practice in June of this year.
Yeah.
Your turn, Aaron.
Yeah. So I'm Aaron Matheson. I'm the co-owner of Reconnect Health with Katie, as she just said. I've also been a physio for 10 years now. Moved back to Moncton in 2010. I'm originally a Prince Edward Island girl, but I married a guy from here. We opened in June, and
I feel like you guys exploded ever since you've opened.
Honestly,
been a big year.
Yeah.
It's been a year.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah. So today we are talking about all things vaginas.
Yay.
We're going to have a great time with this. One of the reasons why I wanted to meet with Katie and Aaron is because when I was growing up, there was a lot of things that were happening through my adolescence when I was, you know, starting to become a woman that really I just didn't know about. There was a lot of things that was happening to my body, that was happening to my vagina in particular, that I didn't know were normal. So when I was having sex, if it was hurting, I just automatically assumed that that was normal. The fact that I started masturbating when I was like 9 years old, I remember when it started to feel good, I was like, why does this feel so good? Why do I feel so guilty about it? So just like little things like that, I found that there's just a lot of stigma around women's health and women's reproductive organs in general. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk a lot about that today and really break all of those stigmas. And I'm also going to open up a questionnaire whenever we're done this podcast and this podcast airs. I'm going to open up a questionnaire for you guys to be able to ask them questions as well. So let's get started. You guys can tell me everything you know about vaginas.
Where to begin? Okay, maybe I can start with explaining what a pelvic floor physiotherapist
yes,
is.
Yes, please. I was literally just going to ask that.
So a pelvic floor physiotherapist is kind of like a normal physiotherapist, but we go on to get education in how to do internal pelvic exams. So that means we're licensed to be able to do vaginal and rectal exams. So we tend to treat conditions like urinary incontinence, urinary urgency, which is when you feel like you have to pee all the time, bowel issues like constipation or fecal incontinence, pain with sex. That's one of the ones that I really like to treat. Pelvic organ prolapse, which is when your organs start to drop way down into your vagina and sometimes outside of your vagina, which I know sounds really scary, but it's really not as bad as it sounds.
What does that mean?
I know we always try to like.
We need to elaborate a little bit on that, please.
Go ahead, Aaron.
The best way I can explain it is if you take a paper towel roll, like an empty paper towel roll, pretend that is your vagina, right? Because it's a long tube. Mm-hmm. Your rectum sits behind it. Your bladder sits in front of it. I'm going to talk about the most common types of prolapses, but what can happen sometimes is because the vagina is it's not super muscular, it's a little bit floppy, is that over time, for lots of reasons, sometimes the rectum or the vagina or both can push into that paper towel roll. And so sometimes women, can really feel like, and I find it's not talked about a lot.
It's not at all. Yeah.
Heaviness or like feeling like there's something in your vagina, or even sometimes if you put a finger in, you'll be able to feel a protrusion or you can see a protrusion sometimes. And that's when people get really
scared. That's when we get the panic emails. Like, I see something coming out of my vagina. What is it? Like, it's probably part of your bladder, it's okay.
Yeah.
It will be okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh my goodness.
If you don't know that that can happen, then it's really, really
scary. I mean, as soon as you said your organs are falling out of your vagina, that it's a little bit of a cause for alarm,
yeah,
I feel like.
It is, right? So for us, it's every day. And we don't want to be blasé about it.
Yeah.
But it's like, we know that these people are going to be okay. And we know there's lots that can be done. But when it's you as a person and it's happening to you, it feels like
yeah.
it's the end of the world.
Yes.
Like you don't
absolutely.
Know what's happening, right?
Absolutely.
We prepare a lot of women for birth. So we work with a lot of pregnant patients, whether they have pain or whether they're just coming in for birth prep. And then we usually see them again after delivery. Erin and I are both pretty passionate about making sure that women who deliver via C-section are treated equally in their rehabilitation as women who deliver vaginally, because we did find that there was certainly a discrepancy between how those were both
definitely.
Treated.
Yeah.
What else?
Yeah, you did a pretty good job. I think you covered and like menopause.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Which I feel like is not talked about enough well.
Yeah, and a major time of change for the pelvic floor.
Yeah. Definitely.
So regardless of if you've had children or have not had children, big changes in the muscles that support your underside
yeah.
during that time.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. So maybe let's talk about sex, because one of my most successful episodes on this podcast, You Dirty Little Birds, was the sex episode. You guys loved that one. So let's talk about sex and maybe some stigmas around vaginas during sex and how that wasn't talked about. Like, I remember during sex ed when I was growing up, mm-hmm. the only thing that I learned in sex ed was how to pleasure a man, mm-hmm. how to put a condom on a banana.
So true.
Right? Yeah. And how to have sex. There yeah. wasn't anything about you are having sex for the pleasure of both parties involved.
Yeah.
You are having sex to release those happy hormones. You are having sex for release of stress. You are having sex, all of these things, right? Because it was taught in school. So they were teaching it in a way that they didn't want you to have sex.
Yeah.
So they were almost trying to scare you in the sense of, if you have sex, you're going to get pregnant and die,
right.
which is a quote from Mean Girls, if any of you don't know. But basically, that's what it was. You have sex, you get pregnant. You shouldn't be getting pregnant at 16 or at 12 or whenever I was learning sex ed in school. So they were teaching it in a way that was considered education, mm-hmm. but not in a way that was not scaring you.
It's very mechanical.
Yes,
right? Like,
exactly.
Here's the basics of what you need to know and good luck to you for the rest. Right?
Exactly, exactly.
So I think even just from a sexual education perspective, like we can talk about the different maneuvers in with sex and how the pelvic floor should function, but even just sex education, I do spend still some of my day, because I think our generation was so educated on not getting pregnant,
yeah.
that I have women that struggle to get pregnant because they don't know that they have to have sex during ovulation. Like, they don't know when ovulation
yes,
is. They
yes.
don't know how to track their period.
Absolutely.
So I think it is really a problem in our education system. And I know that New Brunswick in particular, UNB, does a lot of work at trying to be very progressive in what they think sex education should be in the school mm-hmm. system, but you have to get this past the red tape of the government, and there's parental input, and
mm-hmm.
There's certainly the argument of what children should be learning at school versus what they should be learning at home. So
yes,
I think that
absolutely.
It's a slippery slope, I think, as
yeah,
far
for
as
sure.
The Board of Education, but it does lead to women, like grown-ass women,
yeah.
not knowing what the heck is going
we're
on.
We're having issues in relationships. Like, for me particularly, I grew up in a very open household. I was very lucky in that sense that my parents were very open about talking about sex, and very open about really talking about anything. So I learned what sex was when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah.
And I remember going to school and teaching my best friend what sex was in kindergarten, and her a few years later asking her mom what sex was, and she was given a Kama Sutra book. And basically her mom was like, okay, go read this. Yes, exactly. She was given a Kama Sutra book and she was like, go read this. You'll figure out everything you need to know. And so that was very odd to me at that time. It's still odd to me, but it was very odd to me at that point, because my mom had to have a conversation with me in kindergarten. She was like, Shirley, you can't go around telling your friends what sex is. Like, you're in kindergarten. Like, you were not of age to be talking about this. But my mom was always the kind of person that if you had a question about something about your body, she was going to tell you the truth. She wasn't going to tell me that, oh, this stork comes down from the sky and puts a baby in your belly. No, she told me exactly what it was to have sex, exactly mechanically mm-hmm. what it was, mm-hmm. and that you're sharing something with someone else. So I was really lucky in that sense, but I found that the more I read about it, and then when I was, I remember when I first discovered the internet, I was with my cousin and she was like, oh, like going on miniclip.com, like going through all the games and stuff. And then she went to the bathroom and she was like, you can literally look up anything. And I was like, anything? And she was like, anything. And I think I was probably like 8 at the time. And so she went to the bathroom and I looked up naked boys and naked girls. That was my first internet search of my whole life. And obviously didn't know at the time that the internet tracks what you do and there's history. So as soon as you look up any kind of porn, then you're done for. Your virus gets your computer gets a virus and all this stuff. So my aunt ended up finding the porn that I looked up for the brief 15 seconds that she was gone to the bathroom and blamed it on my older cousin.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there being like, well, shit, it wasn't him. I feel really bad for him. But am I going to say anything about it? Absolutely not. So that's kind of like how I was introduced to the world of sex. I remember starting to masturbate when I was very young. I was probably like 8 at the time. I didn't know what I was doing at the time. And then when I hit like 12, 13, like I knew what I was doing. And then by 14, I knew exactly what I was doing. I'd bought my first vibrator. I knew how to please myself. And I think that that's what really made it a lot easier for me to transition into my own sex life and being with a man and doing that kind of stuff because of the fact that I already knew how to please myself. Mm-hmm. So I knew what felt good for me and I knew how to teach him to make it feel good for me. So it was very easy in that sense. Mm-hmm. I still had some very terrible sexual experiences, but I knew what I wanted and I knew what felt good. And I feel like women my age, even women that are older than me, still have no idea.
Yeah, I think you grew up in a household that was much more sexually empowering than what would be typical.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. I know that I'm very much like the odd one out when it came to my group of friends.
Well, and even in like when she's like, and I was 8 years old, I looked up on the internet. I'm like, there was no internet when I was 8 years old.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's very much more accessible now, but yeah. Exactly. It had just came out and like we didn't have it. Like my cousin, I think was the only person or the only family. Yeah. It was dial up. It was very, very slow. Like it had just come out and they had just gotten it. We'd gotten it like, I think like a couple of years later, but it was still very new at the time, but still give you viruses if you looked up porn. So
yeah, I mean, related to that, like our generation didn't necessarily have the early exposure to pornography, which I think also plays a role in like what real bodies and real sharing really looks like sometimes, right? Because it can be very constructed and can be very violent sometimes. I was in university for sure before you could like Google or get into chat rooms and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, it wasn't as easy to access it for sure when I was growing up.
And you're right. It certainly portrays sex as being something completely different than what we see like in actuality, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's kind of the same in the sense of what was taught to me in sex ed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very based around men's pleasure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The really like the woman is just there as an object.
Exactly.
Yeah. And there's so many things too, like something that you just brought up, lube, for example.
Yeah.
Lube should be a regular thing that you're using.
We are so passionate about lube.
I am also so passionate about lube because if you're not using lube, you're probably not having a good time.
Yeah.
So the World Health Organization has put out guidelines for how lubricant should be made. And because they're not as followed as strictly in North America as we like, we see women coming in all the time who feel like lube makes them worse. So there are certain things like pH, parabens, glycerins, the osmolarity of a product, which is how many chemicals can be mixed per part per water. This is really sexy right now. Yeah, like how many things are in there, right?
Yeah.
And what we find is, especially someone has sensitive skin, if you use a poorly made water-based lubricant, you can cause these little micro fissures in your vagina. And so it burns when you pee after sex. Women will think they have urinary tract infections, but then it feels better after 48 hours. It can lead to pain being more and more prominent in your sex life. So we're really, really cognizant when we advertise lubricants that we want them to be either a really, really well-made water-based lubricant, or to be honest with you, I tend to recommend silicone-based lubricants way more often than the water-based lubricants. But yes, and make it seem like women should always be able to just like have sex whenever they want. And we know that the female sexual response is different than men's. But it's complementary. So when I see patients that have pain, I always say to them, like, if you're just gritting your teeth and trying to tolerate having sex, then you're not having the same sexual response that you should be having. Men have erections. That's very obvious to us. They can't have sex unless they have that sexual reflex that happens. Mm-hmm. Women have a similar but opposite reflex in that when women are aroused, they will have their vagina will widen and it will lengthen and it will make more space to receive a penis, right? Yep. I mean, if we're talking about cisgendered, but what happens is that women don't have to have that sexual response in order to have sex, right? We can grit our teeth and smile and try to have sex anyways, but it's very uncomfortable because now you're trying to put something into a space where it doesn't really fit. And I don't think we talk about
it. It's rejecting it.
Yeah. Well, it's just like I always say, the door is closed, and that's where we try to train the pelvic floor muscles. Maybe you should explain what the pelvic floor muscles are. Because that's kind of a big part of what we do.
Yeah. So, I mean, as like related to what Katie was saying, like the pelvic floor muscles are really smart. That's the way I always explain it. And like once you've had a painful experience of anything down there, so like a painful pap exam, painful tampon insertion, like painful experience with a partner in the past, like it doesn't matter what it is that your brain and those muscles are going to work together to try to protect or guard that area going forward. And sometimes it can be really hard to get out of that cycle of like brain is going to anticipate pain, is going to try to protect the area. You will have a guard response or a protective response, and then that cycle will continue to perpetuate itself. And it can be really tough to kind of break that cycle. And women don't know how to break that cycle sometimes because they haven't had the education and they don't know what tools to kind of use to get out of that cycle. And even using really bad lube sometimes can
make it even worse.
Yeah, exactly.
So the pelvic floor muscles start at the pubic bone on the front, they sling between the legs, and they attach the tailbone in the back. They kind of look like a little hammock, and they kind of wrap around the urethral opening, the vaginal opening, and the rectal opening. And when we're guarding, because we're anticipating pain, we kind of kegel, so we squeeze, and the door to the vagina closes somewhat. And if you try to force something through that and it feels painful, you're going to squeeze even more. So then you're going to try to force even more, and you're going to squeeze even more. And that's that cycle that Aaron's talking about. So the next time you go to have sex, you're going to be anticipating pain because the vagina is so smart. And you're going to already start off with your door closed and you're trying to shove something in.
It's a lot of mental stimulation well, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're already closed off to the thought of having sex, your body's going to respond in that same way.
Yeah. So it's really important to make sure that you want to have sex when you have sex, or have some degree of want to have sex, right? Because otherwise you can end up in that cycle. So we do end up training a lot of women how to, we call it like dilation training or insertion training, how to put something small into your vagina again. You need a win, so to speak, like something going in without it hurting, and then they can relax and gain some confidence. And then something else larger can go in without it hurting. And then we can keep dilating them that way until they can return to whatever size you need to get to.
Absolutely.
I don't need to know.
And I also find that one thing that helped me, but that has helped like even some friends that I've spoken to as well, masturbation. Mm-hmm. Masturbation is literally the key to happiness, is what I like to call it.
You have to be able to test drive your own equipment.
Exactly. If you don't know what you like, if you can't do it, you can't teach someone else, right? There's been guys that I've slept with that were completely thrown off by the fact that I was like, no, you need to do it like this, or you need to, and they're like, what do you mean I'm doing? I'm like, no, honey. First of all, you were licking my leg. So there's that. Second of all, there's no woman on this planet that likes it that hard. So you're going to have to stop using your teeth. And they were like, oh, well, they liked it. Like anybody else that I've slept with liked it before. I'm like, they were lying to you.
They're not telling you.
God.
That brings up, I think, like a couple of good things. Like Katie and I find with pain conditions a lot too, anywhere really in the body, is that a lot of times those people have lost the ability to like touch or look at themselves sometimes too. Or maybe they've had that pre-existing, and that can be a huge barrier to recovery as well. And maybe it is because they grew up in a home or an environment where like self-exploration wasn't encouraged. Or like some women just don't know.
They don't know. Yes. I've spoken to some women that just don't
Yeah. And the other thing I was going to say is we should probably talk about the difference between a vulva and a vagina.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I personally know what the difference is, but there's a lot of people that don't. They think that it's the same thing, that the vagina is the vagina. There's nothing like, let's talk about a little bit of the anatomy of the vagina and the vulva.
So I explain it like what you see on the outside is like a person's face. Very unique. They look very different. Everyone looks different. It can be longer lips, shorter lips, like
different colors.
Yeah. Closed, open more, like can look totally different.
If you guys don't follow the Vulva Gallery,
this
you
really
do. You do? Oh, that's amazing. It's one of my favorite Instagram accounts to follow. If you guys don't follow it, you definitely should, because they're big on showing every kind of vagina that you can possibly imagine. And that's one thing too that a lot of women struggle with, is that they don't see their own vaginas in porn.
Right. Yeah.
Or they don't see their own vaginas in
vulvas.
Or vulvas. Sorry. I'm so sorry. They don't see their own vulvas in porn. They don't see their own vulvas on TV. Like none of that, right? So it probably makes them very self-conscious, just like bodies, right? If you don't see your own body type on TV or your own body type in magazines or in the public eye, then it's really hard for you to be able to relate to anything and be able to be comfortable in your own body as well.
Yeah. True. And then your vagina is your throat. to compare like face and throat. That's usually how I explain it. The vagina.
I think that's a good explanation, honestly.
It's the internal kind of tube that leads to your cervix and your uterus that you don't see. If you open it up, you can kind of see into it. But it's like I compare it to when I explain to patients. It's like your face is your vulva and your throat is your vagina.
And another good place is the Great Wall of Vaginas.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? The Great Wall of Vaginas. Yeah.
On Instagram?
I'm not sure if they have an Instagram account. I usually just send my patients to their website. If you Google Great Wall of Vaginas, it'll come up. But it's an artist that does plaster casts of vulvas. He calls it vaginas because that's better for Google, I think.
That's fair.
But
the SEO is probably better.
It's molds of just hundreds and hundreds of vulvas, and he mounts them and he puts them in an art gallery.
That. That's a really good one too. There was another website that my friend showed me, and it was, I can't remember if it's like omg.ca or something like that.
Yeah, OMG, yes. Is that what you mean?
Yes. And you like go on, you pick someone, it's like someone's vagina and you are able to pleasure them.
Oh, that is not what I was thinking.
No. Okay. So basically it's like a digital vagina.
Yeah.
That you basically, they tell, like, you pick like a personality or like someone there, you pick a woman, and you're able to, they will tell you what they like, and then you're able to like go around and explore the vagina and see like how you can pleasure them. And anyways, it's very cool.
Tech these days.
Right? Wow. Yeah. It was one of my friends that showed me that I think like a couple years ago, and I thought that it was really cool in that sense, because not every vulva is the same, not every vagina is the same. Nope. Pleasure doesn't look the same for every single person on the planet.
No, and for us as physios, we have to be really careful, because when someone comes in for treatment, like, this is a very clinical environment. Like, we make sure that the mechanics are working. We test to make sure that the muscles work. We can't do stimulation, right? But I have lots of patients that if you're not aroused, then the act of intercourse is still not pleasant. So I do refer people to the OMGS website, which is the website. It's got a user paywall that you have to get through, but it has a wealth of information on how women can learn about pleasure for themselves, because it's a task that like they need to learn about that, right? And it's very difficult to have someone teach you how to do that, especially if you've got no idea where to start from.
Exactly.
Or if it feels all very taboo to you. So there's lots of videos.
Which feels very taboo to a lot of people, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So to have a source that you can go and learn from, because it can be difficult for professionals to cross that boundary, because it's very hard for physiotherapists. We need to make sure that we're staying within our scope of practice, and this is very health related and it's musculoskeletal. But then that still leaves this wall of sexual life that we as practitioners struggle to try to teach. Mm-hmm. So it's a useful resource for a lot of people.
The book, Come As You Are, is really good too. It's a good, who's the author?
I can't remember right now.
It's not coming.
I think I have that book, actually.
Yeah, it's got a vulva on the front.
It does.
Yeah.
They're all like
It's a good starting point too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so someone told me this I would say like a couple of years ago, and I will bring this to my grave because I think that it's like such a great explanation in masturbation. And this is like, I have some friends that are very like that don't like talking about sex, or that they're just not comfortable with talking about sex. And this is how I like explain masturbation, how I see it for them. And someone told me this, and again, it'll stick with me forever. And they said, I masturbate every single night. I orgasm by myself every single night because for me, it's an energy release. So throughout the day, I'm collecting energy by everyone that I speak to. So I'm going out in public. The more I speak to people, I'm grabbing their energy and I'm bringing it with them throughout my day. So when I get home, I need to release that energy. And by doing that, I masturbate. And when I orgasm, that energy is being released. So I'm releasing the energy that I've been carrying throughout the day with that orgasm.
It's like a cleanse.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly. And so ever since I've seen it like that, that's exactly how I see it. So anytime that I'm really, really, really stressed out, I will masturbate to have that cleanse, to have that release of happy hormones.
Endorphins, because, yeah.
Yes, exactly. Because you do feel good after you orgasm. You feel relaxed. You feel happier. So when I talk to women that don't ever orgasm during sex, or that don't think that they've, you know, when you've orgasmed before. So that if they say, I don't know if I've ever orgasmed, you would know. First of all, it's just like when you find your wedding dress, when you know, right? but when you orgasm, you would know. So to the women that have never orgasmed in their life, I feel so bad because it's almost like they've been deprived of this thing that doesn't cost any money, that is literally like all of these happy hormones in your body, like all of this stress relief, like it's coming from that.
Yeah. So, but that's hard to have that discussion with someone who doesn't know the starting point.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
I think that's something that we're seeing. Like if you don't even know the name of the anatomy, if you've never looked at your own vulva in a mirror, like there's a huge discrepancy, I think, with how, like learning what your body can do for some women, like they just don't know.
Yeah.
So that can be overwhelming, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah.
At least,
yeah.
I mean, I see women coming in who are in menopause and they've never had an orgasm. So we have to start back, like they're in their mid-50s and you have to start back at square one teaching anatomy again. So some of these things, if they could be covered in our education system, but I know there's problematic with that as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it does create this environment where women can't even report well to doctors. I get a lot of patients that come in and say, it hurts my vagina, and they don't mean their vagina at all. Or I say, like, is it near the vaginal opening? Is it deeper near your cervix? Is it on your vulva? And they can't verbalize that. So I think.
So what would be your advice for someone who has never orgasmed in their life, doesn't know how to orgasm? What would be your advice for someone to, I guess, their starting point?
So I'm a medical nerd. I would probably tell them to get an anatomy textbook first.
Okay, cool.
I'd be like, you need a good foundation.
That's fair.
And then I would tell them to use a mirror on themselves just so they know what they're working with.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because when you're not aroused, the way that your vagina looks when you are aroused is completely your vulva. the way that your vulva looks when you are aroused is completely different.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so, and some people don't know that. Some people have no idea. And, one thing that I was in a relationship, like prior to the relationship that I'm in now. But I found that like anytime that we would start to maybe like, you know, like we knew that we were going to have sex or like making out and that kind of stuff. And then he would like try to stick it in and I was completely dry. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, why aren't you wet for me? I'm like, why did you literally just ruin everything?
Yeah. But they don't know either. It serves a disservice to men who are in male-female relationships as well, right? Because they're brought up on the same assumptions that we're brought up on.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's
exactly.
Just a detriment to everyone. I should mention too, that we have a number of really great sex therapists, sexologists in Moncton that we refer a lot of our patients out to when it does start to get outside of our scope of practice. So we're lucky to have that resource, that there are professionals who can, like, as I said, we focus on the machinery a bit more and they really focus on the brain aspect, the psychological aspect.
Cause that's really a huge part of it.
It is a huge part of it. Right. So we work very closely with them. Oftentimes they'll start over there and then they'll come in and learn like the muscle component. I'm like, hey, their muscles are great. Go back and see the sexologist and see if they can get your arousal higher. And then you can learn to pair that with the physio. But yeah, it does maybe, take a team sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe that's something else that we should talk about too, in the sense that, so when I am depressed, I go through seasonal depression every single year. When I'm really busy, I do not ever want to have sex. So me and Josh have gone like 3 months without having sex because I do not want to have it. I just, I'm depressed. I'm too busy. I am about to go on a burnout. Like, I don't want to have it. And then, so he thinks, or he thought at the time, obviously we've had a conversation since then, but he used to think that, that it was because I wasn't attracted to him. Yeah. I wasn't interested anymore. Exactly. Okay, we're good. Yeah. So he thought that I just wasn't interested, that I didn't find him attractive anymore. And that's why I didn't want to have sex anymore, but it was really because my vagina was closed off to the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where too, I think North America is obsessed with, so in research, we call it PVI, but penis vagina intercourse. It's like,
I love that.
PVI is that North America is obsessed with PVI, and it doesn't necessarily have to be PVI all the time, right? Like, sex can look like a lot of different things. And I learned this from my sex researcher friends all the time, that it can look like a lot of different things. So you can still do something nice for a partner that doesn't entail you having to have vaginal penetration, right? Like, there's lots of things that can be done. So I have that discussion too. Like, if you don't feel ready to have vaginal penetration, or it's not on, like, that's not on your menu tonight, you can still be intimate and do something else with your partner and still let them know that you're interested and that you're looking after each other's sexual yes, relationship, but it's yes, not all about the penis into the vagina all the time.
I think that's a huge stigma in itself, that people seem to think that sex, the only sex is penis and vagina. Penis yeah, and vagina. And yeah, that's it. There's nothing else, but like, there are so many other things, like literally just laying naked with your partner yeah, and just being close to them. That is a form of sex in itself. Yeah. Like, that is a form of being able to pleasure each other sexually as well. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just so many other things that we can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's what needs to be explored a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard for our culture, I find.
100%.
Yeah. The French yeah, seem to understand it better. Like yeah, in France. They seem yeah, to have a better handle on it than us.
I love that. So maybe we should talk about, you mentioned as well, like, pain yeah, in intercourse, and how that can be normal, that can be not normal. So tell me a little bit about that.
I try to be careful when I use the word normal now, just because I don't want to normalize pain. Like, okay, I don't want people to say, like, it's normal to have pain when you have sex, but I don't want people to feel like they're freaks if they do have pain when they have
yes,
sex,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
It's super, super common. Like, this fills both Aaron and my office every week, people that have struggles with intercourse because it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It can be from having dryness. So it can be postpartum. If you're producing milk, then you're probably caught like mini menopause. Like, you probably have dryness. Menopause causes dryness. If you have,
we should talk about too, just like vulvar care in our society.
Vulvar care in our society.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because women are drying out their vaginas by accident.
Every day.
We don't like dry vaginas. We want them moist. We want good, nice, moist vaginas.
You don't like the word moist.
I don't.
Erin's making faces. She doesn't like moist.
I feel like that's a word that everybody hates.
They did a study. They actually did a study. And didn't they get like a whole bunch of like attractive men to say it, and it was still really gross. I did air quotations.
That's so
all right, Erin, do vulvar care.
Most women, again, I don't want to generalize, but are using like really harsh soaps, products. Mm. They're scrubbing their vaginas so
exfoliating
much.
Exfoliating their vaginas.
Right.
Like, exfoliators.
It's really important to know that like your vagina and perineal area has good bacteria and bad bacteria and a really normal pH that it usually has. And when we use stuff like that, that disrupts this, like the symbiosis between the bacteria or disrupts pH, you can actually lose the protective barrier in your skin too. And that can really like throw off a whole host of conditions. So like recurrent vaginal infections, recurrent bladder infections,
yeast infections,
dryness, like
ugh,
so dry. Mm-hmm. And like, then we wear a lot of synthetic materials. So like thongs, underwear, people sleep in thongs all the time. Like there's just a lot of things that we do that don't contribute to like good pH in that area, as well as like good skincare in that area. So a lot of times just having a conversation with women about like,
you don't need to use soap down there.
Like you don't need to like fill your vagina with soap. And they're like, what?
literally pouring like the body wash like, on there.
Yeah, it's like it's a self-cleaning oven.
It's a self-cleaning oven.
Yeah,
yeah. And I think that a lot of women aren't brought up that way. Like we're taught like that whole like you're dirty, like that you need to get clean, or like
you might have an odor, there's an odor down there, right?
Like everyone does have their own odor, and like that's very normal. And like there's times that it's not, obviously, but like. It's normal to have a pH in your vagina and to have discharge and to have things like that. And I think that women sometimes have been taught or whatever reason have continued to.
Well, and some of the theory comes down to there being more porn. Women,
100%, yeah.
Well, yeah. So there's been more hair removal. So you couldn't see your vulva really easily before. And now with porn, which made popular lots of hair removal, now we can see it. Like now we see all of the designer like vaginoplasties and vulvoplasties.
That's right.
So, which I'm all for. If someone has an issue, I'm all for it. If it's that much of we call it genital self-image, like if you have a genital self-image that is that has that like to that point, then yes, there's surgeries that are there. But I don't like when I see people who are like perfectly average looking vulvas that are really concerned that they look not normal down there, right? Or who've had partners that say they don't look normal or they don't look like their last partner. It's like, well, you don't want to, like, you're not dating twins. Like, you wouldn't expect, you wouldn't expect them to look the exact same, right?
Exactly.
I was just going to say, I don't even know if you, like, polled people. Like, I think most people wouldn't even be able to tell you that, like, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of partners would say, I don't see a difference.
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
Like, can you identify them in a lineup?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Get out the great wall of vagina and we'll see.
And something else too, that I feel like is not talked about. I remember watching movies when I was a kid and how they would like, not, I guess like when I was a kid, but like when I was like in my teenage years watching movies that did have sex in it, how like the girl would literally just take off her underwear and lay it there, and there was nothing in her underwear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was nothing. It was completely dry.
Yeah.
And then like, they walk
around. Where is the discharge?
And they walk around wearing like beautiful lingerie every single day.
Right? there's no, you can't see any discharge. There's nothing, right? And so I always thought that my discharge was so not normal at all. I was like, why is there so much snail slime?
Yeah.
I don't understand why there's so much. Like,
and it
why
should change to the
so
month.
Yeah.
It should change the month. That's how you do ovulation tracking. So all of our patients that are looking to get pregnant, we tell them to look for like raw egg whites. That's
okay.
Right,
so
before.
What are like the different kinds of discharge then?
So when you finish your period, like the first day of your period is when we start counting. So you would bleed for however long you bleed for. And then what you tend to see happen is more of that like mucusy looking. That's what I call the raw egg white. Yeah. That tends to happen right around ovulation, or ovulation happens right after that. So when you see that like thinner, runnier, clear looking discharge, that lets you know that you're probably near your fertile point in your cycle. And then after that, it will get thicker, creamier, and whiter until you start your period again.
Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
What is an abnormal discharge?
That's a tricky question. So if it has a foul odor, if it's got a discoloration to it, if it's right around period, then you can have like tinge of brown in it, which would just be like menstrual blood. But
or like significant changes to your norm.
Something that would be way off. Yeah. Like all of it. But even with like with hormonal changes, you will see changes. So no one really talks about the fact that you can get crazy copious amounts of discharge when you're pregnant.
Yeah.
Like it can be vastly crazy when you're pregnant. So women are usually a little bit concerned about that.
Or they think it's urine.
Or they think it's urine because there's so much of it there. Yeah.
Or when your panties are all stained from your
pH.
From your pH as well. That's something that's not normalized either. I've actually seen multiple videos of this is horrible. I don't know why anybody would choose to do this, but I saw this video of this guy who took his girlfriend's panties and exposed her on TikTok and said, like, this is so gross. Like, look how, like, why is her panties bleached from her vagina? Like, what? And I'm like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
like, first of all, I hope she leaves your ass. Like, this is terrible. And obviously it went viral because anything like that on TikTok would go viral.
Shocking. Yeah.
And literally, I was so proud of the comment section. The comment section was just all women being like, shut the fuck up.
Yes,
normal. And I hope she leaves you for this.
Yeah. So I think that's the thing, is that when you don't talk about it, it's very easy to make something like embarrassing and taboo.
100%.
It is nice to see women standing up for each other when it comes to things like that.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. And that's not something that I ever thought was normal either. I'm like, why are there white stains in my underwear? Like, they went through the wash. Like, I don't understand. Like, these are like vaginal skid marks. Like, what is that? don't go away. You can't wash yeah. it. But no, it's not normalized enough. Like, we don't talk about it enough. So people think that it's not normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of self-consciousness, a lot of general image problems that we see for mm-hmm. sure. And I don't know what the answer is to repair that, but I think the more that we talk about it, with our friends, the more that we try to do educational things like this, yeah. it does tend to normalize it a little bit more. And I think that what the hope is just with each generation that they will have better and better genital self-image, and they'll have a sexual health confidence, and they'll just know their own anatomy and can make better informed decisions for what works for them and their bodies.
Yeah, for sure. Well, this was absolutely amazing. Thank you guys so much for coming on here and talking about vaginas. This was probably one of my favorite episodes. So can you guys tell me where, or tell our followers where they can find you?
I always screw this up. You do it.
You can find us in lots of places, actually. So you can find us at Reconnect Health on Facebook or on Instagram. So that's like our clinical practice. That's where we're sitting right now. You can find me at Movement Link. Katie is at Katie Kelly
PT or PT Katie Kelly, depending on which platform.
Which one you look for. Yeah. And then we also have like for people who are planning to have children, we have at Motherhood Link. So we're trying to increase education around what you can do for your pelvic floor and your core so you can make informed decisions during birth. And also it's a whole other topic. But yeah, so you can find us at any of those places.
Amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you guys so much for being here. This episode was so awesome and I cannot wait for you guys to listen to it. Thank you guys again.
Thank you.
Thank you.